Hey, where are you going, Jim? The elevator's over here.
Taking the stairs.
But our meeting's up on 8.
Yeah, I know.
But that's 8 floors up. That's like 8 times... 8, I don't... A lot of stairs.
That's the point. I've already lost a few pounds and earned almost $100 in wellness incentives.
Whoa, you're getting rewarded for working out?
Yeah, I know. I'm just as surprised as you are, Bob.
Fearless is full of surprises. That's the power of the Blue Cross and Blue Shield Federal Employee Program. Learn more about our healthy benefits and sign up at fepblue.org/chooseblue by December 11th.
Welcome back to Locked On Bears. I'm your host, Lauren Cox from Pro Football Focus and USA Today's BearsWire.com, and I'm here to bring you your daily Chicago Bears talk on the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Before we get started here, just a brief programming note for you. The Locked On Bears podcast has always been hosted on Audioboom, and that will be changing here in the next week. We are switching our podcast host to a different service. We want to thank Audioboom for their work these past, really, I think, year of the Locked On Bears podcast, but for me specifically, the last few months when I have been running the show. And to our listeners, we will still be on every podcast outlet. It's just you'll no longer be able to hear it through Audioboom, but we'll still be on iTunes, of course, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, pretty much any podcast-grabbing service that you use. Locked On Bears can still be found there. It just will no longer be on Audioboom. So just a heads up, everything still should stay the same for your subscriptions and everything like that. And we appreciate you listening into this show every day, sticking with us, leaving those reviews. I get tons of great feedback from all of you, and everything will continue as planned and as it has, just no longer with Audioboom. But today is Tuesday, so it is a film review day for the Bears game. I had a chance to go over the All-22 from their win over the Carolina Panthers, and we're going to go through what we learned, what we saw on tape here on both sides of the ball. We'll talk a little bit about some of the big plays in terms of, you know, Leonard Floyd making a couple plays. We'll talk a little bit on Eddie Jackson's interception, and then we'll get to some of the offense as well. Even though there was so little of them, there was a lot of frustrating things with this team on offense and maybe some good things that started to shine through. We'll touch on it all on this episode of Locked On Bears, but let's start here with the story of the game, the Chicago Bears' young defense. There was a lot to like from this crew. I mentioned it on yesterday's recap podcast. It was hard to find individual players that actually had a bad game. I mean, certainly players make mistakes on plays, and there's going to be plays where players play poorly, but for the course of the 72 plays this defense was on the field, it was hard to find individuals that really had a bad game on defense, just a very solid all-around performance, and clearly that was led by Akeem Hicks on the defensive line. I mean, he is the best player on this defense, and I think on this team, across the entire roster. I mean, he is a Pro Bowl caliber player. The contract extension Ryan Pace gave him has been well-earned this season. The Carolina Panthers had just no answers for blocking him, particularly as a pass rusher and in pass protection. The right guard, Trey Turner, and his backup, Amini Silatolu, had nothing on him. The consistent pressure he brought was critical in not only disrupting Cam Newton, but opening things up for his teammates to then also get pressure to sort of pick up where he was able to leave off, flush Cam Newton their way, and set the team up for more group success, even beyond his individual effort. And I picked out a few plays in particular you'll see on my Twitter timeline Tuesday morning. Go take a look there at Cox Sports 1 on Twitter. It's COX Sports 1. Akeem Hicks was just an animal on some of these plays, and it was fun to watch. He split some double teams. He jumped some snaps. It was really just an encouraging performance from him, and it was actually a pretty encouraging performance from Jonathan Bullard as well, the former third-round pick who had been a bit of a disappointment not only last year in his rookie season, but coming into year two here, hadn't really done much, and he started to look more like the player that the Bears drafted in the third round in this game. Not that he was dominating or, you know, making splash plays every snap, but there were a number of snaps where he was quick off the ball like he was in college. He was able to get some penetration. He wasn't making a lot of tackles for losses per se, but he was redirecting running backs. And again, doing some of that dirty work that allows maybe an Akeem Hicks to get free and make the tackle, or allows Danny Trevathan to come in behind him and make the play. I'll tweet out some of his things too, because he made a couple nice veteran plays that really stood out to me. You know, you still see some issues sometimes technically when he's taking on a double team. He can get blown out a little bit if he doesn't have good pad level, or he doesn't see it coming and he's not able to make the first contact. So there's certainly, you know, he's not fixed or solved or, you know, ready to be this great thing just yet, but it was a very encouraging step forward, sort of forced into more action because Roy Robertson Harris got hurt and because Vic Fangio went with so much of his 4-3 defense in this game. It was good to see a Jonathan Bullard step up in when his number was called. Leonard Floyd's performance in this game has been a subject of debate, I think, among Bears fans and the Bears internet Twitter world. And I touched on it a little bit on yesterday's recap podcast, but he made some good plays in this game. And I feel like I say it every week with him. Let's see Leonard Floyd win more one-on-one pass rushes. You know, he got some production in this game, but there was a lot of times when the Panthers left him unblocked, or the offensive lineman does a good job, but the play gets extended, Cam Newton rolls out of the pocket, and then Leonard Floyd is able to disengage from the block, chase him down, and get pressure that way. You know, Floyd had a sack early in the game, and I think that was his most impressive play, and he deserves a lot of credit for that. And he had a good game. I'm by no means calling it a bad game from Leonard Floyd, but that was a great play. He was one-on-one with a tight end, bull rushed him pretty good. And sometimes you wonder, well, why did the Panthers leave him one-on-one with a tight end? Or why was he unblocked on some plays? That sack play against the tight end, one-on-one because the Panthers had run a play action to the left. And with Leonard Floyd sort of at the left outside linebacker, so the rightmost defensive player in the box, he, you know, because all the offensive linemen are going the opposite direction, that just left a tight end on the right side of the offense to block the backside, which happened to be Leonard Floyd, and that's just a matchup that you're going to see him win. But I think the critical thing on this play was that Cam Newton kind of, I don't want to say he gifted the sack to Leonard Floyd, but this was a play where Cam Newton took a good pass rush from Leonard Floyd and made it much worse for the offense, because Cam Newton has a strong tendency when he gets under pressure, he tends to run to the right, which you could sort of expect. He's a right-handed quarterback. It's easier for a right-handed quarterback to throw running right. You don't have to throw across your, well, you don't have to turn your body to be able to get your body into the throw. And so Cam Newton tends to scramble to that direction. But that was the direction Leonard Floyd was rushing from. And so when Cam Newton then tries to step back and rush right, that takes away the leverage of the tight end trying to block Floyd. Whereas the tight end is in between Newton and Floyd, and Cam Newton heads towards Floyd's side around the back of the tight end. That turns a good pass rushing pressure into a sack as Newton lets Leonard Floyd sort of make the sack as he rolls to him. But on that play, if Cam Newton had stepped up to the left and not gone to the right, he had a pocket still over there. Not that he had 4 seconds over there, but he had space to stay and throw if he had moved left. He goes right, Leonard Floyd disengages and makes the sack. It was a good pass rush, and I think that's the most critical point here, is that yes, if Cam Newton had run left, Floyd wouldn't have gotten the sack. But that's not necessarily the most important part of the play to me. What was most impressive was everything that happens until the sack. The pass rush, the one-on-one, that was a good play by Leonard Floyd. And even if Cam Newton runs to the left and not the right and Floyd doesn't get the sack and it goes down as a pressure, that's still a good play by Leonard Floyd. Newton helped him turn that good pressure into a sack. But it's important to remember that sometimes the actual sack isn't the most important or the most impressive part of the pass rush, and in especially in terms of looking at what is repeatable and what is, you know, something to build off, something sustainable. The pass rush, the bull rush on the tight end was impressive and sustainable. The sack part was taking advantage of a mistake by Cam Newton, and it's still a good play. It's just important to sort of put perspective and more context on what goes into a sack, even beyond just the actual pass rush of the outside linebacker. Because generally in this game, I thought Pernell McPhee was the better pass rusher. Not that it was a huge difference. Not that Leonard Floyd was particularly bad as a pass rusher. I thought he was very average in that regard, but I thought Pernell McPhee was particularly difficult to block. The left tackle, Matt Khalil, didn't have very many answers for him. It was funny. McPhee was actually a little bit explosive, or at least the left tackle made him look explosive, not off the snap, but McPhee would like, it would be like the snap, and he'd give the left tackle a little bit of this hesitation where he'd stand up across from him and he sort of like, there'd sort of be going this half second stare down of like, which way am I going to go? And then he puts the outside rip move on him, and the tackle is not prepared for that. And it was explosive, maybe not in the lower body, but in the upper body, and in winning with his hands and being aggressive and physical. And that's what Pernell McPhee can still do very well. And he was quite disruptive rushing off of that left side of the offense in this game. And it's just, again, perspective for Leonard Floyd. As much as Floyd was around the quarterback a lot, I thought as far as purely as a pass rushing performance, not as a pressuring numbers, but just in as a pass rusher, thought Pernell McPhee was the better outside linebacker in that game. Again, not a bad game from Leonard Floyd at all, but it does speak to Pernell McPhee still being a talented, useful player at the outside linebacker position. I was a little bit disappointed in Christian Jones, his performance. Not that he was all around bad, but there were a few plays in coverage, maybe more than a few plays in coverage, that kind of left you a little bit concerned. And not that he was getting, you know, blowing coverages for 40 yards, but like there were a couple play action plays where he was really slow to read it and get back to where he needed to be. There's another play where he's not seeing the play in front of him very well. He's thinking a lot instead of reacting, where he, you know, there's a play action where he has to turn and run back, and he kind of turns and he's more focused on getting to a certain spot rather than fully covering the guy that's right in front of him. He's trying to think, and he's like, oh crap, it's a pass. He's turning, he's running, and he doesn't notice this wide receiver right in front of him that Cam Newton throws the ball to him. Where you see a Jones, again, too focused on maybe getting back to a certain spot where he thinks he's supposed to be, just playing football, seeing the play in front of you, reacting and playing to the football, to the before maybe Nick Kwiatkowski to get back out there. Not that Jones was killing the Bears or anything or having a terrible game, just, you know, always going to be room for improvement for a guy who is a backup, albeit stood out when rewatching this game. One other guy who I thought stood out for a few issues in coverage was Prince Amukamara, and he's usually solid, and I think through the first however many games it's been since he's been back from injury for the Bears, I thought he had been the best cornerback on the team this season, and this game might have been his worst of the year. You know, I think the physicality of the larger Panthers receivers gave him some trouble. He was shaken off a little bit by them, and when he tried to get physical with them, it didn't necessarily go well. But you know, there were other times too where, like, downfield he gets burned on like a double move. Like the last play of the second quarter, when the Panthers had a big gain to Kelvin Benjamin, and then they're in that hurry up to get downfield and spike it real quick. They weren't able to spike it. They had a penalty and the half was over. But the play right before that got them into field goal range, was a big gain by Kelvin Benjamin. That was on Amukamara. He ran a double move. It was a post or a corner post route where the wide receiver fakes the corner like he's going to turn and go outside, then turns inside, and Prince Amukamara bit really hard on the outside play. Easy gain for Cam Newton to move them like 40 yards downfield and potentially get them in position to clock it and maybe get a field goal or a shot at the end zone. Just little things like that from Prince Amukamara, who's usually more solid than that. Might have had his worst game of the season, but ultimately wasn't horrible and certainly didn't lose the Bears much in terms of team defense, still largely holding the Carolina Panthers offense down. Some of that in credit to Kyle Fuller opposite him, who, yes, did a pretty darn good job in coverage. He had a good game. But again, it comes back to the Leonard Floyd thing of player plays well, and maybe the fans get too caught up in a couple of really noticeable plays when he's around the ball, but the other 70 plays in the game, you know, 72 plays for this defense, Kyle Fuller made a couple of nice tackles in this game. He came down and tackled Cam Newton, stepped up against the run and made a few. He also missed a tackle in this game, and he pretty consistently misses a tackle a game or two every game this season. It's not as though he is, like, I saw somebody talk about him as one of the better tacklers in the league. Not the case at all. He's a decent tackler. He's not a horrible tackler. A lot of guys miss more than him, but quite a few guys miss fewer than him. But, you know, he stepped up and made some big plays, and that's important. Same thing in coverage. A lot of growth he's continuing to show, particularly in man coverage, understanding the routes that the Panthers wide receivers were going to run against him, knowing what the guys are going to do, being in the right position and staying with them. He also had a couple bad plays in coverage that, again, didn't get necessarily recognized. There was one play where he did get beat against Curtis Samuel for about a 20-yard gain, and that's one maybe you get to see on the TV version, but there were a couple routes where the receiver ran it and was open downfield, and he got absolutely burned on a double move of his own. So a little bit what they call a sluggo, like a slant and go, where the receiver fakes like he's going to go across the middle and then turns and goes upfield. He was wide open. If Cam Newton sees it and throws it, it's an easy touchdown in a very different football game. But Cam Newton was already looking to the other side of the field and threw a intermediate out route or something like that for 5 or 6 yards instead of finding that open receiver that had burned Kyle Fuller. It's just little things like that where he's playing well and he's taking steps forward. But again, I'm just trying to tone down the crowning Kyle Fuller as the comeback player of the year and, you know, this defensive star who needs to be paid $12 million a year. I mean, maybe by week 17, we'll have a whole season of track record of Kyle Fuller to say, yes, pay this guy a lot of money. It's very possible, but I'm not ready to pay this guy a lot of money after two or three big games in the middle of the year here against a Cam Newton that was hobbled up, against a Joe Flacco that has not been playing well at all, and against backup Minnesota Vikings quarterback, and just a weird, it's been a couple nice games in maybe some not as difficult situations for Kyle Fuller. Not that he doesn't deserve credit for them, but let's see 16 games, and then we'll talk about paying this guy a big contract and trying to see where that might lead for the future. Every player has big ups. Well, okay, not every player has big ups, but players have ups and downs. And Kyle Fuller is having a very exciting up right now. And if he stays up, then that's when the contract talks. But if he has the downs, that's when you start to... it's a wait-and-see thing. And I try and preach objective football analysis here, not getting too fired up about a player playing too well or too poorly, and just trying not to let anyone get too carried away with someone, because that's what it's all about. There's no blue and orange colored goggles here. This is not a fan gushy Bears player podcast. This is, let's talk about football. Let's learn about football. Let's be objective watchers of football. And I hope that's what keeps you guys tuning in to this podcast. But back on this defense. I couldn't talk about this defense without talking about Eddie Jackson in this game. And that interception play, the pick six, that was pretty phenomenal in terms of the team defense. I mentioned it yesterday that Prince Amukamara, after the game, said on that play that he knew the slant route was coming because of how the Panthers were aligned and what they had seen on tape. It was a 2x2 and the wide receiver had a wide split. And so on tape, that typically showed slant route. That's what happened. And when you watch that play, all three Bears cornerbacks knew the route. They all knew the play call before it happened. And you can see the cornerbacks actually like run the routes that the receivers are going to run even before the receivers run the routes. Like Kyle Fuller is on the backside of the play and he's going up against like a, I think it's either post or an in route. And he breaks on it as the wide receiver does. Like as the receiver takes his first step to the inside. Kyle Fuller is already moving to the inside. Like, there was not, he wasn't even reacting. He was just going. And same thing happened with Amukamara on the slant, and Bryce Callahan in the slot also had a slant or something or an in and was right on it. And Prince Amukamara or Adrian Amos coming down from safety was on the quick out. I mean, all four of the receiver routes were completely known by this Bears defense, and they were all over it. And then Prince Amukamara obviously tips the ball up into the air. And it's funny, Eddie Jackson didn't even end up, when the pass was thrown, Eddie Jackson was not sprinting downhill to get there. He saw Prince Amukamara was there and kind of stopped. And then as soon as the ball tipped up, that's when it clicked for him, and he took off. And it was impressive speed and explosiveness to then get from almost a standstill or a light walk jog to full speed to where the ball, you know, 15 yards or 10 yards closer to get underneath the pass and catch it before it hits the ground to get the interception. And then, of course, everything he's able to do after that is just the playmaking ability and the return skills of Eddie Jackson. It was simply just an exciting and encouraging performance, not only from the young safety and some of the other young players on the team, but just the defense all around, playing as an 11-man group. They largely stepped up. I think I may have overstated some of their early struggles. I mean, they were vulnerable here and there, particularly over the middle with Amukamara and Christian Jones, but it wasn't all that concerning when you go back and watch it. It wasn't as though they were necessarily getting diced. You know, when you watch the All-22, there were some concerns, yes, but for a large portion of this game, it was largely only a couple drives that maybe were worth monitoring or worth raising an eyebrow at, but largely there were a lot of plays where the 11 guys did their job, and it was just a very encouraging, a second straight encouraging performance by this defense. Napa
know-how. It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how. Napa know-how. At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum 3 items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.
The offense, on the other hand, was so extremely frustrating to watch. And I definitely, watching this, I had some very unprofessional words muttered out of my mouth when I'm watching that tape. And just not, it's just so frustrating is the only word for what Dowell Loggins and this offense was able to do in this game. And I specifically emphasize Dowell Loggins first there, because so much of the Bears' failures on offense in this game, for me, all point back to the play calling and the use of personnel. But a couple plays I want to point out to maybe illustrate that. First, the first drive for the Bears, they get to a 3rd-and-3, and it's the play where Tariq Cohen runs the wheel route, Mitchell Trubisky throws it over top, it kind of gets bobbled and out of bounds, and it's 4th down and the Bears punt. First 3rd down of the game, 3rd and short. This should be a play where your rookie quarterback should be able to convert this easily. And it's this wheel route to Tariq Cohen, like I said, but it's a pre-designed play. You can tell right away. Tariq Cohen's on the same side as Trey McBride. McBride's out wide, Cohen's in the slot. And Cohen's going to run like an out route and then turn upfield for the wheel route. And Trey McBride is running a pick play for Tariq Cohen. He from the snap, he looks and finds the guy covering Tariq Cohen and literally tries to block him. He just gets in his way and runs into him. And Tariq Cohen is then supposed to potentially be open running the out route. He's not, because the Panthers, they made an adjustment on the play. Sometimes they call it I don't know if they were in zone on that side versus man on the other side, or if they ran what's called a banjo adjustment, where two guys in man coverage, if the receivers cross right away, they'll just switch them, and they'll know pre-snap that, hey, I get the guy that goes inside, you get the guy that goes outside, even if it's not the one lined up against you, and it's still technically man coverage. One way or another, the Panthers passed off those routes, so the pick play didn't work. And so I think that was designed that if the pick play works, throw the out route. If the pick doesn't work, turn it into a wheel route. Mitch Trubisky throws the wheel, throws a catchable pass, even if it wasn't perfect. It was a little bit underthrown and behind, almost kind of back shoulder, but it looked unintentional. But still, Tariq Cohen got hands on it, bobbled it, foot out of bounds, kind of a dropped pass. Not a perfect throw, but a catchable first down. But still, what a weird, I guess, why? Third and three, and you run a designed throw. It's only going to Tariq Cohen on that play. You don't give your quarterback the option to read the defense, find an open guy for 3 yards. No, don't give him that. He has to throw it to Tariq Cohen on this play, and the out route's not there, so he throws the wheel route, which is a lower percentage throw. And it's just, that's holding your rookie quarterback back. That's keeping the bubble wrap on, the kid gloves, saying, okay, Mitch, you don't have to think. You just have to see if he's covered to throw the wheel, and if the pick works, then throw the out. And it doesn't work, and it's another fourth down. It's third and three. This isn't third and 10, and that's it. You know, you're in a tough situation for the rookie, so maybe then you say, okay, here you go, Mitch, just throw this and live to play another down. It's third and three. Run slants, or, I mean, there's just so many play calls you can do on third and three. Those are the easy third downs to convert, and we get this pre-designed play for Tariq Cohen where if it works, it works, and if the defense figures it out, you're screwed. And Trubisky did a good job of putting a catchable ball up there. Credit for Mitchell Trubisky there, but I don't know why Dowell Loggins isn't, again, third and three. Just give your quarterback a chance to make a play and utilize his full offense. That was not the case, and the Bears punted. Next drive. Bears get first and 10. First play. It's a same, similar thing. First play, first and 10. It's a screen to Tariq Cohen. It's not a normal screen, though. Tariq Cohen's running an out route again, and from the slot, and this time Tanner Gentry is out wide with him, and Gentry's just blocking on the play. And Cohen's running the out route, and he throws it. No decision for Mitchell Trubisky on that play. It's snap, throw to Tariq Cohen, and Tariq Cohen drops it. Why do you only give, you know, as much as criticize Tariq Cohen for dropping a pass, you cannot drop passes, but why are you only giving your rookie quarterback one option to throw to on passing plays? Because, perfect example, later on in the drive, the Bears get third and 9. Dowell Loggins says, okay, now in the most difficult passing situation, okay, now let's give Mitchell Trubisky a full field to read. So they put him in the shotgun, they let Mitchell Trubisky scan the field, read the coverage, and guess what? The rookie quarterback finds Zach Miller over the middle of the field for 24 yards. He threaded it between the linebacker and the slot cornerback that was pressure nearing him in the face, still stands in there, throws a perfect ball to the tight end past the sticks on third and long for 24 yards. Huh. Isn't that funny? When you give your number two overall pick the opportunity to read a defense and find an open receiver, and you give him a little bit of time to throw, he can find someone past the sticks for a big gain. So then why are you running the third and three pre-designed play to Tariq Cohen, first and 10 pre-designed play to Tariq Cohen? The defense knows that. They figure this out. The Ravens started double-teaming Tariq Cohen a couple weeks ago in that game, or last week when they played. The defense, they key in on Tariq Cohen, and yet the Bears continue to force plays to him and hold Mitchell Trubisky back when he continues to show the ability to read a defense and find players open down the field. Now, that's not to say Mitchell Trubisky was not without his flaws in this game. I mean, as much as Dowell Loggins was holding him back, there's still things that you want to see the rookie quarterback grow and improve on. Like the first play, he was sacked. This was a play where he had some time to throw, and he does a good job of drifting a little bit in the pocket to avoid a little bit of a pressure on the right side. Nothing terrible, but just drifting right. And he looks to Zach Miller. And this is a third down and 10, but the Bears were in field goal range. Now, this was, you know, they were at like their own, or the other side, like in the middle 30, like 35 or 33 or 37. And so the one thing you can't do in that area is take a sack. He had the check down to Zach Miller. He looks at Zach Miller and says, no. And he tries to then extend the play with his legs and go back across the other side of the pocket where he is met by a defender and brought down for a sack. And this is a play that you know, Jordan Howard was picking up the blitz and did not do a very good job of that. And then that defender was able to sack Mitchell Trubisky. But some of that goes on Mitchell Trubisky. I mean, I would call it a semi-coverage sack. You know, 33% coverage sack, 33% Jordan Howard not doing a good job in pass protection, 33% Mitchell Trubisky needs to take the check down or throw it away, specifically in that situation. You know, we saw what an all-check down offense does to Mike Glennon, but when you're in field goal range and it's third down and you have a guy who could potentially catch the check down in Zach Miller and maybe make a play, or at least just get an easier field goal for points on the board, Trubisky wanted the big play there. And that was a mistake. He needs to know the situation there. If that's first and 10, okay, maybe, or even second, any kind of second down, we have another down to live with. Maybe you want him to try and just, you want your rookie quarterback to try and make big plays and try and, you know, you don't want to tell him to be too conservative. But on that particular play, in that particular situation, the one thing he can't do is take the sack. Throw it away, take the check down. He wanted the bigger play. He took the sack. The coverage was good on the other defenders. The other receivers didn't necessarily have a lot of open options, so the defense gets some credit for the coverage sack. Jordan Howard gets some blame for not picking up the defensive back very well, coming from that right side. But Trubisky got to know the situation. That comes with experience. That's sort of what you expect from a rookie quarterback. But again, just something to continue to look for improvement from. I largely feel like pocket presence is still one of the big things we need to see better from Mitchell Trubisky. Like, there's too many times when he just wants to scramble quickly and he wants to tuck the ball and run. And sometimes he keeps his eyes downfield if he's scrambling to the right. But when he scrambles left, he tucks it and runs and he misses guys downfield. Like, this is a difficult thing for an offensive coordinator and a quarterback, because sometimes you would just say, you know what, just scramble, because then you're not going to take a big hit. You're not going to turn it over. You can just pick up a couple yards, slide down, and get another down. But at the same time, like, there was one in particular in this game when the pocket was coming down a little bit on the right side, and if he just stepped a little bit to his left, stayed in the pocket, and looked downfield, he had Kendall Wright on a crossing route 20 yards downfield, wide open, and it looks like Trubisky sees him as he's tucking the ball and running, and he had time. You know, they was getting a push on the right side, but none of the blockers had lost. There were no pass rushers coming free, but when he gets pressured from that side, he's so quick to tuck it rolling left or scrambling left instead of keeping his eyes downfield and seeing that open receiver. It's just a little things in the play, and I think actually Kyle Long on that particular play was flagged for holding, so it might not have necessarily on that specific play been a difference maker, but just the little things from your rookie quarterback. Better pocket presence, and that comes with more experience, and that maybe comes from not having started a lot of games in his career. He's going to watch that one on tape. He's going to see it. He already has, I'm sure, up to this point, and he's going to realize next time, oh man, he left one on the field. Still, not a bad game from Trubisky at all, just little things we want to see him continue to grow in. But like I said, sometimes the play calling is just holding him back. Like, you talk about this third and two play from the goal line where Trubisky scrambles to the left and dives at the pylon to try and get the touchdown. You know, right up there, third and two, again, third and short. Give your rookie quarterback the chance to read a defense. We talked about this a couple weeks ago when they were in a similar situation in a rollout that he had to throw to Tariq Cohen and threw it out the back of the end zone because his one option on that play was covered. Similar idea here, not the same play at all, but they bring Tariq Cohen across for a play action, and then it's a roll to the left. And he's got Zach Miller and Tyquan Mizell, his only play in the game for the young running back. They both run to the flat. They run to the same spot. One of them is running from the tight end position, one's from the backfield, but they're both quick outs, and they have two guys running the same spot. So what does that mean? Two more coverage defenders in that same area. And then on the backside, you have Tanner Gentry and Trey McBride running crossing routes. And they both run at the same depth to the same spot. And when you're in the red zone and they're in the end zone on the goal line, you have even less room for your quarterback to throw. And so when you have four wide receivers running to two spots, you then have four more coverage defenders. You have eight players all in this very small area in one half of the end zone. The only half of the end zone that Trubisky can throw it to, because that's where all his routes are, and the only half of the end zone that he can run into because he's scrambling that direction. So you end up having four receivers and five defenders all standing in the end zone at the goal line that Trubisky is then forced to run to. I don't understand the play call at all. It's just a horribly designed play. I don't know if the receivers didn't run the right routes or what the design was supposed to be there, but the success rate on a play like that just looked like zero. The Panthers were perfectly in position. It was typical goal line coverage from them. Nothing, I don't know how they were supposed to catch them out of position when you have two running backs and a tight end on the field. If you spread them out five wide, maybe you get different coverage. But when you show that personnel, they're not going to just man-to-man everybody and leave the middle of the field open or anything like that. They were perfectly prepared for it based on what the Bears gave them, and they defended it, and Mitchell Trubisky had to dive for the goal line at the pylon, take a hit from Julius Peppers, slip in the turf, and fall a yard short, and the Bears take the field goal. Just questionable play calling from Dowell Loggins holding back your young quarterback. And I think questionable play calling from Dowell Loggins held back his young running back. I mean, Jordan Howard had all 21 of the Bears' handoffs in this game. 21 carries. Two of those 21 carries were against a 7-man box, which means the other 19 were against 8 and 9-man boxes. The Panthers loaded up against the run and consistently stopped the run. And to me, that is on your offensive coordinator almost 100%. I thought the offensive line was largely fine in run blocking. I don't want to say they didn't have a great game of run blocking, but when there's just so many players for them to block, I don't know how much you can expect them to do. And it felt to me like a lot of plays ended up putting the emphasis on the tight end, not necessarily by design, sometimes by design, but there were a lot of plays where Jordan Howard is forced to cut back to where the tight end is, and they didn't necessarily do a good job. Adam Shaheen was just kind of okay. Deion Sims was bad in run blocking, just not opening things up for Howard to have a hole to go through, which again ends up coming up to the tight ends when the offensive line more or less does its job. There's just not any room for him to work when there's more guys in the box to block than the Bears had blockers. Just head scratching for me for Dowell Loggins, yet another example right there. And at the same time, you do have to credit the Panthers defense for tackling what I thought very soundly. And Jordan Howard broke two in the game, and there were a number of plays where typically you see Jordan Howard shake off a run. Like if he hits a hole and there's a guy falling to the ground already, and maybe he gets his fingertips on him, but Howard runs through it. The Panthers did a very good job of grabbing on, holding good technique in their tackles, and not allowing him to create a lot of extra yards. That way, give the Panthers some credit there. But when there's 8 and 9 guys in the box, your offensive coordinator has to use different personnel. Maybe run some more play action off of that. They ran two play action passes on 14 dropbacks. Maybe try and get the Panthers biting on that. Maybe get some wide receivers in the game to get the Panthers in different personnel. Maybe run out a shotgun. That would have been something that would have been cool to see, but didn't really get to see much of that at all. Just would continue to load up with tight ends and running backs. And fullback Michael Burton played a lot too, and the Panthers would answer with an 8-9-man box, and the running game got less than 4 yards a carry. It's not that hard to figure out. It's not as though the Panthers were doing anything insanely new or difficult to avoid. I mean, they're telling you they're going to stop the run. Maybe open things up for your quarterback to throw, who again has shown his ability to be able to read a defense and throw the ball past the sticks with accuracy. I know I spend a lot of time on Locked On Bears criticizing Dowell Loggins, and largely he deserves it. But I do want to give him credit for something in this game. This is not a I hate everything Dowell Loggins does show. This is a here's my objective opinion on what Dowell Loggins does, and he did some good things in this game. The Bears, as much as they were predictable in personnel and handing off the ball and just putting in tight ends and fullbacks and running backs and handing it off, they mixed up their run concepts a lot in this game. You know, the Bears, through the first 6 weeks, they're a very zone-heavy rushing team. and a lot of outside zone, so stretch runs, some inside zone, a lot of split action where tight end works back across the formation if the, for the running back to cut back to. This game was different. You know, the first play of the game, the first run, I think, it was either the first or the second run, was extremely predictable, and the Panthers jumped on it. They all knew where the run was going. I'm going to tweet that gif out as well. The tight end, or I mean the defensive end, jumps the snap to the outside where he knows the run is going. Three linebackers all step that direction before the Bears even commit that way. The Panthers knew where that run was going, and they stopped it. And the first couple plays, the first couple of drives, that was the case. The Panthers were keying in on the plays. They knew what was coming. The Bears were running their staple zone runs, and it was being stopped. And Dowell Loggins did something we don't see him do a lot. Dowell Loggins adjusted in a game and started switching up his run concepts. And they went to a lot more of those power runs with a pulling guard coming around. They ran a couple trap runs, which are very rare for Dowell Loggins, where the basically, like the one in particular that stood out, Kyle Long and Bobby Massey leave the defensive tackle unblocked, the snap, and work to the second level, and the tight end comes in from the side and blocks that unblocked player who was intentionally unblocked to be then taken out by the tight end, and then you have your two offensive linemen straight up free to the second level to start blocking linebackers. And that play worked for like 11 yards. I mean, they started switching things up, and really by the fourth quarter, when the Bears running game actually started working, this looked like a different running scheme. It was power after power, the occasional zone runs mixed in there, and just so different from any run concept play calling that we've seen from Dowell Loggins all season. And he deserves credit for recognizing that the Panthers were recognizing it, realizing, hey, wait a minute, I'm predictable in my run play calls. And he adjusted and took brought out the power runs. They found more of their running success in that fourth quarter, perhaps some to the Panthers' defense kind of wearing down and the game generally being on the line and their offense just not giving them any support. But still, the run concepts were changing. The running game had some more success. And mark this down on this October 24th show, Lauren Cox giving credit to Dowell Loggins for adjusting in a game. It worked. The Bears obviously won the game, even though the offense wasn't all that successful, but there is hope for this offensive coordinator. If he can realize his other predictabilities, his other mistakes, and start adjusting them, you might have yourself a little bit of something here. If he takes the kid gloves off of Mitchell Trubisky, pulls the bubble wrap off a little bit, and opens up the offense, he showed signs of development as a play caller with his adjustments in the running game in this game. Definitely something to keep monitoring moving forward. I also think Vic Fangio gets some credit here, not only for just a strong defensive performance, but while we're talking about coordinators growing and recognizing their own predictability, Vic Fangio deserves some credit as well, because when the Bear, you know, Fangio mixes up when he blitzes a lot. We talked about that on the definitive Vic Fangio podcast last Wednesday's show. If you haven't heard it, go back and listen to it. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any episodes. But that one in particular was a real good one. Broke down his scheme, what he does, whether or not he's actually a quote-unquote conservative defensive coordinator. This game, he brought out the blitz quite a bit. They sent a lot of rushers at Cam Newton. But even more importantly, you know, last week against the Ravens, the Bears were a little bit predictable in that all of their blitzes came from defensive backs. I think there were like maybe one linebacker blitz, but Bryce Callahan rushed a lot. DeAndre Houston Carson had a quote-unquote blitz package where he rushes the quarterback. And maybe the teams are starting to figure that out, that he brings the defensive backs a lot, not so much the linebackers. That changed against the Carolina Panthers. Danny Trevathan rushed the passer 9 times in the game, was getting after the quarterback and asked to blitz the quarterback more than a couple times. And because he got into more of the 4-3 defense, he was able to, you know, blitz the outside linebackers and send 5 men after the quarterback. And we even just saw more, you know, even Christian Jones rushed the quarterback quite a bit. And, you know, just different ways they were able to get after the quarterback. Didn't blitz defensive backs hardly at all. 1 from Bryce Callahan in the whole game. But the Bears still brought the heat. They still got the pass rush going against Cam Newton. And that was a critical area of growth. And you see a Vic Fangio adjusting, recognizing when he was predictable, and putting out a better, stronger defensive performance in front of it. All of that is evidence of growth and self-scouting by both coordinators. Even if it's small with the offensive coordinator, even if maybe blitz stuff isn't huge for the defense, it's important for a team to improve, for a 3-13 team to get closer to a 500 team. It's encouraging, it's good news for Bears fans, and I think it's a good reason to bear down.